This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hi, this is Rebecca Buchanan, host of New Books Network, and I am here today with Brenda Novak, who's the author of a number of books, but her latest is Tour Season. So, Brenda, thanks for being here with me today.
Thank you for having me.
Could you start out by talking, since this is your latest book that's coming out in a couple weeks, could you tell us a little bit about like what Tour Season is about and what the premise is?
You bet. This is a book that has pretty good mystery running through it. There's some romance in it as well. It's a bigger canvas women's fiction novel, which means I can include a lot of other elements, which I love to do. It's a beach read, essentially, but it's about a woman who has just finished taking the bar. She's finished her school and she's going to launch her career. Her boyfriend is going to become a doctor. He still has to take his test. So he sends her ahead to the fictional island of Mariners, which is based off Nantucket. And she's going to stay in his lovely family's vacation home there until he can meet up with her. So she's just going to, you know, soak up some sun and read while he finishes up and then joins her. Well, while she's there, and it's completely out of season, but this big storm hits. And so it's almost like hurricane strength. Like, she doesn't know what to do. She's in this strange place when the power goes out. And so she's trying to figure out, okay, how do I get lights? Her phone, because she's a poor starving student. Her phone doesn't have much battery. It doesn't hold the charge like it should. So she's like, I'm going to run out soon. And then I'll be stranded in the dark for hours. So she goes looking around the house, which has recently been refurbished. So not a lot of extra stuff around. It's very decorated nice though. But anyway, she finds some candles in the bathroom and she doesn't have anything to light them with. So she goes into his former room and she's thinking, you know, he was a teenager. He probably smoked pot or something once upon a time. He's got to have matches in here somewhere. So she starts digging through all of his stuff, which has been boxed up because of the renovation. And she can't find anything. She climbs on the boxes thinking maybe up in the closet. She's feeling around. What she finds up there is a loose board. And behind that board, she finds something rather shocking that kind of turns everything that she thought about this man that she's about to marry on its head. And when I read the excerpt later, you'll see exactly what that was.
So you have this these characters, right? Like, so she's starting the bar. And like you said, she just passed the bar. There's a lot of mystery running through this. And you also have sort of twin brothers that are part of this too. I would love, like, you have some really interesting characters that you've brought into this. Can you talk a little bit about sort of the characters you have and that sort of creation of these characters and some of those choices?
Well, I love the twin situation. I haven't written twins before. I think this is my first book in almost 80. And twins are always a fun dynamic because you can do so much with them. But I love the idea of them being twins and looking so much like on the outside, but not being anything alike on the inside. And so that sort of plays well into the mystery, because you don't know, you know, whether it's really Remy, her fiance, that might be responsible for what's going on, or it could be his twin brother. And then you've got this mysterious caretaker who has a past that he's hidden, but he seems like a really nice guy, and he seems to come on, be Johnny on the spot and help out when she needs him. And so you get a lot of characters who, yeah, well, you know, you want to leave some mystery in the story to where people are guessing until the end as to who could do it. And I think that developing the twins gave kind of a good foil to each other's personality.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, so you said this is sort of the first time you wrote about twins, because I was wondering like what that was like to really think about, like, here are these two characters who really do have very different personalities, but at times there are certain things that they do that are very similar, right? And it could go either way. So yeah, so
loyalty is there, even though they don't always get along. And I think that's sort of typical of siblings, right? When you kind of have a love-hate relationship sometimes, especially I can see that happening in twins who struggled to get along or felt a lot of jealousy, because you don't have your own limelight. You don't have your own birthday even. You know, I mean, everything is shared, and you're constantly compared. And so I would imagine that would be a difficult thing. And so I just tried to imagine what that would do to the various egos involved when put in this difficult situation.
Right. And you also have a lot of sort of class conflict too, right? There's some privilege, especially with the twins, and then with your protagonist coming from means, right? And coming from, and then your caretaker. So can you talk a little bit about that too, and the choice to have these very different sort of class and this class conflict in here too?
Yeah, I love exploring where everything looks like it should be perfect on the outside, but it actually isn't. And you would think somebody raised with the type of affluence that Remy and his twin brother were raised with, and a mother who steps in and tries to fix everything. And you'd think that that would be wonderful to have, you know, and until you look a little closer or look at the flip side of that, and you think, oh, somebody who gets entitled, somebody who's always had everything, they don't understand what it's like to really work for it, or they don't appreciate what they have perhaps, or they're unhappy in spite of that. Whereas you have the heroine who was raised, you know, in a rambunctious big family, had to share everything, had to work really hard for what she had, still isn't able to lean on her parents the same way Remy and his twin can lean on theirs. And it actually forged a better character and somebody who is able to be happier because she has, her innate self-esteem is built on other things, right? And so she also has learned to appreciate, which makes her more empathetic and caring to those around her.
And also you have sort of so many narratives going through, right? You have the main mystery, but you have sort of what's going on at Mariners, what's happening in California, what's happening, right? Like you have all these, like, so can you talk a little bit about just like, is that always like when you're writing, do you often have that? Are you planning like, let me figure out how to tell like four storylines, or is this just, you know what, because you find a way to weave it all together. So what's that like, you know, is that something you're thinking about, or is that something that just worked for this novel, or, you know?
Well, I think it adds added interest when you can get a good subplot going on and you get other characters, and also the characters can help characterize the people around them by the way they are either different or similar, or how they react to the stimulus involved. And I really liked the subplot of the heroine's brother because he was such a genuine good guy going through something that he had no control over, and her desire to help him and bring him out through the other end of that difficulty also helps to characterize the type of person she is, despite what she's going through at the same time. She's there for her family, there for her brother, really tries to step up. And I also liked kind of contrasting her relationship with her brother compared to Remy and his brother.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so did you write this too with the idea that this would very much be this kind of beach read? Was that what you were hoping for with this? Or were you hoping for it to be sort of a beach read and a mystery? It sort of combines them all, right?
Yeah, I tend to do that. I don't know why. That just must be an extension of me, but I always have to raise the level of difficulty. Like, it's so much easier to get traction in publishing if you can just write one thing. Like, why I can't, it would make it easier on my publisher because they'd be able to adequately represent it on the cover if it was just one thing. And I don't know why. I try. Sometimes I hit the target a little more squarely than others. But sometimes I guess my love for romance and suspense, and it kind of filters in my women's fiction because the Seaside Library, the bookstore on the beach, they all had a very strong mystery element as well. Summer on the Island did a little less so for sure. So I tend to veer into that. I don't like really hardcore, like cut them up, slaughter type horror type stuff at all. And so I always veer away from that, but I like the forward momentum that that type of conflict gives a plot. It's very page turning to me as a reader. And so you can only, as an author, write what you love to read. So I end up with these books that have a lot of romance because I love the feel good at the end of the romance. I am basically a romance reader at heart, but I also love these, the ability to have the bigger canvas and combine some of these other elements. So I don't know. My publisher has the same question. I'm sure they're wondering why I can't just make it easy on them.
Yeah, but I guess for a reader, like, you know, it's kind of like, it's fun. And it's like, for me, it was fun to kind of figure out like, okay, where is this going? And like, okay, this storyline has to like bleed in somehow, right? This isn't just here to be here and then disappear, right? Like, so Jack's relationship or what happens with him has got to be important for the rest of it. And how does it weave together? So, I mean, I think it's fun. But yes, I can see.
Yeah, it just gives a bigger picture of the person's life too, because we have such complicated lives. So to bring your lens back a little wider, because like, right, think of a romance or strict mystery, that the lens is right up on the action happening. If you pull back a little, you can get more of the context of people's lives, which in some way I think can deepen the read because you understand them better and you see them in a wider context. They're more connected to their history. They're more connected to the people around them. And so you see how they came to be who they are. And so I enjoy both. Like I love a good genre read, but I'm really having fun with these bigger beach reads that allow me to do that.
Right. And I really appreciated that. It also kind of touched on how different kinds of loss, right, that we can have, but not in this way that it like that. Yes, we can read it. We can be like, oh, I connect to that, or I have had that sort of similar experience, or understand that, and how sort of loss comes in with most of your characters in different ways, right, and how that can impact you throughout.
I think it's because one of my core themes tends to be whether we face adversity as a stepping stone or a stumbling block. And at first it can get the better of us, but my characters eventually dig deep and figure out a way over that mountain. And that's something that I find cathartic as a reader when even fictional characters go ahead of me and take on this stuff and conquer it. I find that really motivational and encouraging. And so I think that does happen a lot in my books, but I also deal with a lot of redemption themes. Like I love, for whatever reason, exploring people who have done terrible things. They may be well justified, but still terrible things. And then the regret and the atonement that they try to go through to make it right is what makes the difference between a good person and bad. Not being perfect, not starting out perfect. That isn't the difference between a good and bad person to me. It's that even with your mistakes, that you overcome them and you atone for them and try to make it right as best as you can to continue on to be a better person. So that is a theme that runs through a lot of my books as well.
Mm-hmm. So do you want to read a little bit from this book so that folks can sort of get an idea and get a feel for it?
Yeah, let's see what she discovers here. So we start out the book where she is at the house, like I told you, and she's alone. And Remy has encouraged her over her phone to look for something, you know, some lights or something. She did find a battery in the drawer, but it doesn't have very good batteries. It's kind of dimming. So she wants something that she can, reassure her throughout the storm. So now she's going into his room looking for those matches I was telling you about. So although this room had been updated like the rest of the house, there was a graduation picture of Remy on the dresser from when he got his bachelor's, along with some old baseball and soccer trophies. Remy had insisted she take the master. Might as well be as comfortable as possible. We can always switch rooms. My parents make it out to visit us. So she wasn't staying in his old room, but she knew this had belonged to him. She'd seen it yesterday when she first arrived and explored the house. She searched his drawers, but most were empty since the furniture was new. She did find several boxes in the closet filled with old clothes and memorabilia, and guessed his mother had asked the workman to put his belongings there for him to sort through the next time he returned to the island. After digging through clothes, old schoolwork, and things he'd made as a child, she lost confidence she'd find what she needed in those boxes and started to feel along the top shelf of his closet. Could he have hidden a bong or some marijuana with a lighter? He smoked on occasion and once told her he'd started young. Although the closet would be the most likely place to find that type of thing, she couldn't reach all the way to the back, so she climbed up on one of the heaviest boxes and used her flashlight to see. There was no bong, no lighter or matches either. She found a ballpoint pen, a random bookmark, and a spiral binder with Remy's name drawn on the cover in colorful graffiti-like letters and pages filled with incredible drawings. She'd known Remy was talented. He'd done a number of sketches, including a picture of her dog before she had to put him down 3 months ago, and quite a few human bodies showing the detailed anatomy of the organs, muscles, and ligaments. He said it was a great way for him to study, and she could see why that might be the case. But the drawings in this book weren't quite so clinical. These depicted violence, knives dripping with blood, torture devices, and mutilated bodies. With a grimace, she tossed the binder and put it back, closed the binder and put it back. She couldn't understand why Remy or anyone else would have the desire to draw such things, but a lot of teenage boys were fascinated with the macabre, even though she found those graphic images unsettling, disturbing, especially while her flashlight was fading and she was likely to be left in the dark, stranded alone in this, quote, cottage by the sea. She shouldn't make too much of it. Coming to this place had seemed like such a treat before the storm rolled in, she mused, but right now she'd rather be in the cramped, kitschy, well-loved four-bedroom farmhouse where she'd grown up, even if all her siblings were home and arguing over religion and politics, as they often did. She was about to scramble down and move on to Remy's twin brother's room when a loose board along the back of the shelves caught her eye. There it is. That had to be where he'd hidden his marijuana, she thought. Lifting the loose board revealed a hole in the wall that contained a small nylon duffel bag, the kind an athlete would use to carry their equipment. She reached for it, then hesitated. She was already a little shaken by what she'd seen in that notebook. Should she really press on? This wasn't her house. She had no right to invade Remy's privacy. After all, she'd just seen a part of her fiancé, even if it was from when he was much younger, that she didn't find appealing, and they didn't need any more strain on their relationship. But if this was indeed a bong and there were matches or a lighter with it, she'd have candles and a way to use them. She wasn't doing anything wrong, she reassured herself and got down so she could use both hands. After unzipping the duffel, she pointed her flashlight inside it, but she didn't find what she'd expected. The bag contained several pieces of cheap jewelry, a torn picture of some girl who looked to be 18 or 19, and a handful of women's underwear.
Thank you so much for reading that, right? Like, so we really at the beginning get set up by wondering, like, what's going on? Like, why does he have this bag? And, you know, and she struggles throughout. There's this internal struggle with her often, right, throughout this as to whether it could really be Remy's or why it might not be Remy's and it could be someone else's, right?
Right. And there were already some cracks appearing in their relationship. So she's hanging on mostly out of loyalty and also trying to keep her mind open because they'd been so in love at one point. She's not really willing to accept that that has faded and that it might be time to say goodbye. And so this definitely prods her in that direction, but it takes time to come to some type of conclusion as to what happened with the bag and what she should do about it.
Right. So I want to talk, so you have that new book coming out, but you have there's so many other things going on that I want to talk about those too. And I would love for you to start. You have started kind of writing later in life. So can you talk about what brought you to writing? And because I think often people are like, well, I can't be a writer or I can't do this. And so can you talk a little bit about your journey to writing?
You bet. I actually started now at my age. I think it was young. I was 27. But I wasn't writing as a child. I never dreamed I would be a writer. I caught my daycare provider drugging my children with cough syrup and Tylenol to get them to sleep all day while I worked as a loan officer. And when that happened, you know, it just blew my trust in other people caring for my child. I just felt such mother's guilt for even making it to where this could happen to them, you know. And so I quit my job to stay home with them, but it was at a very difficult period in our financial life where my husband had decided he was going to go into residential development. And he had 35 homes in various stages of construction. And then the market just literally just tanked. And so even though he was trying to be conservative and they were all spec homes they were pre-sold. We had contracts on all of them. The price dropped so far, it was below the contracted amount. So you either have to drop the price and sell them at a loss or try and hang on to them and rent them, but you've got construction loans. Anyway, it was a bloodbath. So he's out there trying to save his business, working night and day. I've got I had three of my five kids at that time. So I have three kids at home trying to figure out what can I do to help. And it felt like somebody had just, I don't know, put a ball and chain around my ankle and thrown me in the pool and said, swim. You know, I mean, I just couldn't think what I could do that I could do with three children. So I was reading a good book. It was called Knight in Shining Armor, which is iconic in the romance industry. My sister had sent it to me. It's by Jude Devereaux. And it's a time travel romance, and it was carrying me away from all my worries. And I remember closing it and thinking, I can write a book at home. I wonder if I could do this. And so I launched out the next day. My all-time favorite book was Jane Eyre as a child. So I wanted to write an English set historical, and I set out to write that. It wasn't the quick fix that we needed. It took me 5 years to teach myself the craft and to get that book published. But it came out with HarperCollins, and here I am all these years later. It's actually the 25th year since my very first book was published this year, and I'm still with HarperCollins.
Which is amazing, right? And which is awesome. And so, you know, you have this sort of long publishing career, but you also are involved in getting people to sort of create communities around reading. So can you talk, I know you have sort of a book group on Facebook where you do a lot. Can you talk a little bit about that and how you sort of cultivate and craft these sort of reading communities?
You bet. It was my daughter's idea to start the book group. I used to do an online auction for diabetes research that was focused very much on writers and readers. So I would auction off, for instance, opportunities for writers to be read by an editor at HarperCollins and within 24 hours of them receiving the manuscript and then get a call to respond, and or agents, or we had authors doing lunches with them. Lee Child did lunch with him in New York every year. Diana Gabaldon did lunch with her every year. We just had wonderful offerings, and we raised quite a bit of money for diabetes research over that 10 years. It was like $2.6 million. But so I was exhausted. I had just brought this to this. I was deciding I'm going to take a break for a couple of years because I was turning out three books a year. I had these five kids. I was doing this charity. So I was exhausted. But my daughter, the one who got the medication, was a baby when she was young, is now had just graduated from college. And she was a teacher, but she wasn't enjoying what was happening. And she said the school that she was at just had such great needs. It was really hard for her to face that every day. It was overwhelming. She spent more than what she made there and just trying to fill in those gaps. And she said, this is just a really sad, depressing life for me to go face every day. So I said, well, why don't you come over with me and help me with social media? I don't know anything about social media. And she was good at it, you know, being young. So she did. And she said, we should start an online book group. And I had just, like I said, finished the auction. I'm like, no, building anything is so much work. Like, I can't even face it. And she goes, no, we'll keep, you know, it'll be fun and I'll help you. And so that's what we did. And it's been almost 8 years and so glad I did it. Of course, we thought it would be great, a great promotion vehicle, but the real bright side to it is the relationships and the community that we have formed. These people have become our friends and they come out and support me at my book signings. And we get together often online. In the months that I don't have a release, I feature other big name authors. We've had Kristen Hanna, James Patterson, Susan Wiggs, Robin Carr. We've had a lot of really big name, Peter James, fun authors. And I, a lot of times will travel to their house like I did with Sandra Brown. And I went to England for Peter James. And it gives the readers a little bit of an inside glimpse of what their home is like and what they are like in a relaxed atmosphere. And then I interview them. And then if they get the Brenda Novak book box every month, they also get an autographed copy of the book that we are reading that month. So at the end of the year, they have 12 books that are the Brenda Novak challenge and that we read in book group that month. And they have a complete collection and then they earn their pin. And oh, we have game nights. Like tonight's bingo. My husband, they call him Bingo Ted, and he tells silly dad jokes and we just have a good time with them. We found that during COVID, it was really hard for a lot of these people to get out, obviously for all of us to get out, but some of them already had health issues and things that made it even harder. And so we started just doing fun things together to entertain them and to, you know, it was focused on reading, but it's grown to 40,000 members strong and they are the kindest, nicest people you ever want to meet. So I would like to invite everybody to join the fun. We have a great time. It's just Brenda Novak's book group on Facebook.
So you have a lot, right? You, in addition to writing a lot, you have a lot going on with getting them out and like, yeah, playing games and having fun, which I think is an important way to keep people, right? You get people reading, but keep people reading is to have other people to talk to about the books and about what's going on.
Yeah. And the one comment I get probably the most from the people in the group is that they love being introduced to other authors that they had never read. So you may think somebody's, you know, like a huge name, like we just had Susan Elizabeth Phillips, who's been really big in the romance genre, especially. And she, there were so many people like, I've never read her. I was shocked, but they were excited to make the connection. So it's really fun that they feel like they can talk about other authors and read other authors and stuff too. So it's a good group.
Yeah, because often if you're reading one, if you have a genre that you really love, you know a lot in that genre, but like to be able to broaden and find others. You also, it sounds like, did something that is like on my bucket list of things to do. And can you talk about your book stream? Like, I'm always, you know, I joke with a friend of mine that we are going to retire and just get an RV and travel around and bring books all over. So can you talk about your book stream?
Might be up for sale later. You'll have to keep it in mind. I don't know what we'll do with it quite yet, but we're not done with it. We're having too much fun with it. This was another of my daughter's ideas. And she said, Mom, we should renovate a vintage Airstream and turn it into a bookstore and put a little coffee shop in it, and we'll take it across the country for your tour for the Seaside Library. And this was only about 6 months before the Seaside Library was coming out. And I said, absolutely not, because I know no one who renovates Airstreams. I wouldn't even know where to get one, whether I could afford one, if we could get it done in time. And my husband pipes up and he's like, Brenda, our neighbor down the street just moved out in the country to renovate Airstreams. And I'm like, why didn't I think of that? I mean, he had a gymnastics business. You know, so it's like, there was no, I was like, you got to be kidding me. He said, no. I said, but what are the chances he'll have one that's small enough? Because I don't want to try and tow this huge thing. And especially because I didn't plan to sleep in it. And so I was like, oh, you know, so we called him up and he goes, I have the perfect 19 foot little, it's 1963 Globetrotter. It's been gutted. So you don't have to waste the shower and, you know, all the stuff, the cupboards that were in it. And we can turn it into the cutest little bookstore. And he said he could get it done in time. And I was like, well, it was meant to be at that point. So he finished it in mid-March, and we took off just a couple weeks later, and we traveled 13,000 miles, which is the equivalent of halfway around the world. And we went all around the perimeter of the U.S. doing events with readers and my book group members. I must have hugged 2,000 people. It was wonderful and fun, and got to see so many places, but it went quick because it was like one right after the other. You know, in order to fit in that many stops, we did 33 stops, and it took 2 months. And because of the drive time, it was hard to get that many in.
I was going to say, that's a lot, like 33 in like, every other day or every day I'm getting it in and doing that. So did you have just your own books? Did you have a variety of books that you had in your sort of book group? Like what kind of books did you have kind of available for people? And
we had my entire backlist. So all 80 of my books. And then for the when I went to the California State Fair after the event, we did add other authors, signed books by other authors. Like we've had Catherine Coulter in the group. We had hers. We've had Debbie Macomber. We had hers. And so we had Sheila Roberts come down from Washington and actually sign with me in the book stream at the California State Fair. And I'll be going back to the California State Fair this year. So it's going to be fun.
Oh, so that's awesome. And then, yes, so coffee and a book and you're set and good to go.
Exactly.
So can you talk a little bit? See, you have, like you said, you have 80 books. You have a huge back catalog and that. But can you share a little bit about some of the you read from tour season? We talked a little bit about that. But what else do you have? Like sort of one of my, my questions are like, what else is going on? What else do you have coming out and happening?
Well, these three books just came out. They're my last mass market books because I'm moving only into trade and hardcover. But so these are my last, it's a trilogy of romances. Tallulah's Back in Town. Then it goes The Talk of Coyote Canyon. And then The Messy Life of Jane Tanner just came out a couple weeks ago. And I'm getting some great feedback on these books. They were really fun to write. They're about strong female characters who own their own business. The middle one, especially, it's about a woman trying to make it in a man's world, even though there are plenty of people, you know, wishing against her and how she deals with all that and overcomes it. I just love that she's tough and she's got this chip on her shoulder and she's going to, you know, show them. And anyway, it's been a fun trilogy. So that just came out. Then Tourist Season comes out on April 2nd, as you mentioned. And then I've got a book coming out in the summer that's part of Harlequin's 75th anniversary. It's called Tying the Knot. And it was kind of a fun thing when they invited me to do that. I said, I would love to do it if I can finish up this last character that people have been asking me about in my Whiskey Creek series. And they said, sure. So I wrote Grady's story and that'll come out mid-August. And then just 1 month later, the Banned Books Club, my trade for fall will come out. And I'm anxiously awaiting to see what that cover looks like. And they're supposed to get me something today or tomorrow. So I'm like, oh, I can't wait.
And so you said you're moving from a sort of mass market paperbacks to just trade. Can you talk about that a little bit since this sounds like a new kind of move?
Well, I think it's sort of forced by the market. I'm prolific and I like writing romances and mass market just fine, as well as my trades. Because of the advent of indie publishing, whenever you take any type of, well, it's economics, right? When you flood something with supply, it presses prices way down. So there's been really incredible deflation in publishing. And so it's making it tough for publishers to survive. So they pretty much have had to concede the mass market level, if you will, which is both, I mean, it's probably good for some things, but what it's bad for is that it's hard for a new author to get started with traditional publishing, because that was their testing ground, where they would take somebody on and it was affordable enough for them that they could see, you know, if they could work with this author and groom her into something that could move up into trade and hardcover. And now, because that's pretty much just indie published authors in that space, they're having to make that move and try and make it work. But if you look at it like a pyramid, right, that you've got the mass market on the bottom tier, which is the widest, right, where the most people can fit. And then you've got trade in the middle tier, and then you have hardcover in the tiny little triangle on the top. So you're taking all these mass market authors, trying to shove them up into that upper area, which, you know, not everybody's going to fit. So right now we're going through a tremendous shakeout in publishing of authors, but that will probably then domino into publishers as well, right? So I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. I've been in this business, published for 25 years. I've seen so much change, but I have never seen it quite like this. So it'll be interesting to see where we go, especially with AI now writing books and putting them up on Amazon. And having to try and weed that out. And again, you're just adding, you've opened the floodgates on supply, right? So just coming. And I think readers are probably like, whoa.
Yeah, it's hard, right? And it's hard. So do you think you're going to publish as many books then as you have been, or is that going to slow down too?
That's going to slow down. I'll go down to 2 per year in the next 2 years. And then I may go to 1, just depending on what everything looks like and what my publisher wants at that point.
So I have to ask, because you are publishing so much, what is your kind of, that's a lot of writing, right? A lot of discipline. Can you talk a little bit about, for folks, like what that looks like for you and how, you know, your day to day.
Yeah, I work a lot. I've always been very driven work-wise. I'm not the kind of author that puts off her deadline and then tries to write it all at once. Like, that would just lock me up in panic. So I have to pretty much stay, you know, lope along, but I had 5 kids. I couldn't just hit the pause button on my family, right? I had to be there for dinners. I had to be there for sports and homework and weekends and nights off. And so I couldn't just rob them of that time because I didn't stay on top of what I needed to get done. So I just kind of lope along, make sure I get my pages done every day. For the most part, I get up, go right to the computer. I do try and work out every day just because I'm sitting the rest of the day. So, which they say sitting is the new smoking, right? So I'm up to like 10 packs a day, if that's the truth. So I do try and, you know, work out, lift weights and run in the evening. But yeah, I work a regular, well, it's more than 40 hours, but during the week, I take the weekends off to be with my husband still. And nights we watch TV and work out together.
So, yeah. So you have sort of this sort of, very regimented practice to get all this done. You have your Facebook group, but so we've been talking for a while. You have your Facebook group coming out, your book comes out. So is your book for this month for your book group, the new tour season? Like if people are interested in participating in your Facebook group or kind of know what's going on, what are the next couple of months going to look like for readers?
Yeah, you can find out all the fun stuff we do on my website under the book group tab. And there's also a link where you can just go right to Facebook and join. We'd love to have you. This month we are reading, for March, that is, we're reading The Messy Life of Jane Tanner, and we'll have our book group meeting at the end of the month, the last Thursday. The schedule is also on that book group tab, so you can see what's coming up, what books we'll be reading. And then for April, we'll be reading Tourist Season, which comes out on the 2nd. It's going to be pretty hard to promote this book because my daughter's getting married, the one who works with me, and it's going to be in Italy, and we're all going to be gone for 3 weeks. So I don't know how that's going to work out. I kind of feel bad for this book because I don't know that I'll be able to give it a lot of support, but I'll do what I can because I love the story. But we are going as a family over to Italy to see Alexa get married.
That sounds amazing.
It's going to be fun. And we'll share a lot of it with the book group and post pictures and, you know, and I'll do that on my author Brenda Novak page on Facebook as well.
And I am sure that Italy might play a role then in an upcoming novel or two.
Don't know. Maybe. I'm just In the past, publishers weren't too interested in foreign settings. They wanted small town America. So we'll see. I don't know if something will occur to me that will be so great that they'll be like, yeah, let's do it. So maybe. I never say never.
Well, like Brenda, it's been really great talking with you and hearing about your books and sort of what you're doing and how you're, you know, talking and getting people to read and be a part of that community. And and people can go to your website and sort of look at that. But thank you so much, Brenda, for talking with me for New Books Network.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for reading my book. I hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah.